23. I'll give you a correct in the drive, folks. You have a fire in a one story ordinary. Looks like it's about 40 by 120, 125.
All right, I want to welcome everybody in. I am super excited this evening. We've got so much going on, not just with our regular hosts and our guests tonight and everything. It's just crazy. Everything that's going on. There's all sorts of craziness going on in the fire service. We're going to try to touch on some of those things and talk about a fire, talk about a couple fires actually this evening. But let's start with the most basic of basic things. First, let me thank everybody who downloaded and listened to last month's podcast with Coralie Moore. Some of our best download numbers ever, and that truly obviously was a credit to Coralie and the way he plugged everything else out. I wanted to make sure that I did not forget this. I was kind of going back through some of my notes because I just got my copy of the 9 L's, Coralie Moore's brand new book. I've only just got started. I'm way behind in my reading because I also just got Champo's Tower Ladder book, and it's Tactical Tips and Tales. Dying to read that. I got to make some time to do that. So let me start with introductions real quick. As always, I'm Todd Edwards. Keep Row at Com here. This past October, I started my 41st year in the American Fire Service. I know I'll take a lot of grief from that for my brother Anthony, but I'm okay with that. still doing a little work here and there, very fortunate, very blessed to get out and meet and teach and across the country. So, Anthony, if you could give yourself your introduction for us, my brother.
Anthony Rowetta, captain in Mobile, Alabama. Been here 14 years. 3 years before that as a volunteer in northern New Jersey. Like Todd, we get to do a lot of stuff together. I've got to do a few things with our guest tonight. Up in Virginia doing some stuff together, so really excited to have him on tonight and what he's going to bring to it. So just really looking forward to what we're going to talk about tonight.
Awesome, and pretty much without any further ado, our guest tonight, Sammy, if you could introduce yourself to everybody.
All right, sure thing. Hey, thank you for having me guys tonight. My name is Sammy Vega. I'm a career firefighter with the Calumet City Fire Department that's located just on the southeast side of Chicago. I've been in the fire service for the last 21 years, started as a volunteer, and have spent the last 18 full-time with Cal City. And I am currently the line rank of an engineer, which is all jobs should probably be your favorite job and just own it, but it has been my least favorite job. Even from the little conversation I gleaned earlier, I think you guys probably understand why. I've been doing some training for a little bit. I'm also the program manager for the Illinois Fire Service Institute Engine Company Operations Program. I do a little teaching here and there with some of my pals that last minute come out, and how I got to meet Anthony out east, and that's a little bit about me in a nutshell.
All right. Well, that I'd say that's pretty descriptive right out of the gate, you know, talking about your job and everything. So let me – I want to start – let me start with this, and again, this is an opportunity for me to do something I know Anthony will not. I want to brag about Anthony, his company, the Mobile Fire Rescue Department, on a working structure fire early this morning. They were able to make entry and locate a male trapped inside the house, wheelchair-bound. They're able to extricate that victim, and the victim is going to be 100% great, full recovery, and that is a true credit to Captain Rowett, his company, and I know how, you know, Anthony, you know, may talk a lot about training, but I can guarantee this, I know he lives that every day. So when you hear us talking about training, our passion for it and our passion for the job, that's an example right there of why we do what we do and why Ro does what he does. And Anthony, if you could just, you know, kind of give what you can. I know, you know, being fresh and everything. I love that it happened today, the day of the podcast. Just FYI for everybody listening, we got both our guests and our co-hosts are on duty tonight. So we'll see. Hopefully we won't lose both of you, and I'll be filling in a whole lot of blank time. So, Anthony, just kind of a quick overview, if you could, about what happened this morning.
Yeah, so happened kind of first thing this morning about just under 2 hours after shift change. So we kind of went through our morning routine, station duties and all that. We're actually talking about the drill we were going to go set up in one of the apartment buildings we drill in our area. House fire came out in our first due, kind of right on the edge of our first due and our second. We ended up being first due. The second in engine company to us there, their station's under remodeling right now, so they're actually living in our firehouse. So they were kind of right behind us, and the truck from our firehouse was coming behind them. We got in first due, smoke showing from the rear of a two-story a single-family dwelling, single-story in the front, two-story in the rear. We walked up, went down the Bravo side, you know, doing size up, and a guy in the street just hollered to me, hey, make sure he's not in there. And I was like, okay. So we got back around to the front. Door was locked. My crew was stretching a line up to the front door. I forced the door. We had floor-to-ceiling smoke, and I could immediately hear screaming coming from inside. So for us, it ended up being kind of an audible. That's not normal for us because we're usually the engine and truck are right on top of each other. The truck boss happened to be off today. That's usually here. It was just some different things. So I turned around. I'm used to him being right kind of over my shoulder trying to get ahead of the line, and he wasn't there. I saw the truck just starting to pull into the block. But I saw the second in engine boss was kind of right on the other side of the fence, right in front of where we were. And we were riding with four. They were riding with three. We work with them a lot, so I trust them a lot. And I just made the decision. I had a kind of a bead on where it sounded like the voice was coming from. I had an extra body compared to him. I just looked back and, you know, said, hey, man, we're going to leave you our line. I got somebody inside, and we're going to go grab him. I got an extra body. We can cover ground pretty quick. So we went in. The biggest thing to me is, I got two rookies riding with me today, and they did a great job. One guy's got just off probation 1 year on. Another guy just hit his 2 years. And there was no hesitation. Two engine guys that we said, hey, man, we're going in without the line. You're going ahead of the line. We got to find this guy. And they just took off. So we went down, found a couple sets of rooms. One guy went in one room, the first room we got to, which was like you went about halfway through the house, got to the base of the stairs, and there was like a little alcove of rooms, two bedrooms and a bathroom. We set him in there. I went with the other guy. We went to kind of start going around the back side of the stairs where it seemed like there was going to be another room because we couldn't really pinpoint exactly where the voice was yet. And just in that area, the first guy in that first room hollered to us. I got him. We came back in. I sent the second guy in that room to help him. The first guy had found him in the wheelchair, had got him to the floor already. They were in zero vis operations at that point. There was zero vis in that room. They got him. They said, we're ready. I was at the door, kind of had a bead on how to get back out with him. Just guided him out. We brought him out and had EMS waiting, and everything worked out. They treated him for some smoke inhalation, and they said everything's good to go. So it went good, and the biggest part was that even for young guys, we threw the audible because of staffing that day. We had an extra body. We could cover it fast. The truck wasn't there yet, and we worked together a lot, but we also – in our district, we train together a lot. So we train with that crew on a regular basis. I had no doubt leaving a line for them, even though that's not something we typically do, that they were going to go put that fire out. There was no doubt in my mind that if we went in there, wherever we went, I knew that fire was going out. So we were able to throw that curveball, and just from training together, it didn't throw anybody off. Everyone was able to just operate as they needed to, and we ended up having a good outcome.
Yeah, just as a and I think from a learning standpoint for everybody who's listening, because I know we preach a lot about water on the fire, and I know we preach a lot, engine does engine, truck does truck, but there are going to be scenarios, and I think this is a perfect example of a senior line boss making that audible, making that decision. The other engine could hit the fire. You guys were already had a beat. I love that you made that. I think that's probably the teacher point I want everybody to walk away with, Ro, is you guys – pretty much had a really good idea And instead of spending any amount of time discussing where the guy may be, you guys already knew. So it's a lot easier sometimes to do a quick switch to get the job done. So I think that was just an unbelievable call. Great job by your company, especially these are young guys I know on your crew. And obviously the other company involved with the entire incident. So congratulations, jam-up job by the Mobile Fire Rescue Department. Sammy, do you want to add anything to that just from, you know, your viewpoints or just hearing what Anthony was talking about?
Oh, yeah. Outside of being, like, extremely pumped up now, yeah. So just some of the thoughts on that, and you hit it where – you mentioned, you know, between engine or truck work or what our tasks are on the fire ground. One of the big things for us, especially South Suburbs, which I also like to call the Gary Metro area, as a shout out to Anthony and I's friend out east of me. But
he's good friends with Todd too.
Yeah. Okay. So he's a good fan of the G-Ron then. So things we talk about quite a bit is the decision-making, that split-second decision-making that you got to have happen when doing engine work, right? And in that same relation, we talk quite a bit about water on the fire, and, like, we stress it. Almost every fire conference is saying water, water, water. And one of the things that we would put out to guys, and, you know, I'm sure Anthony has hit it with his crew, is, you know, where you're at in the building, you know, when is there a time to deviate off, or when is there a time to make this decision? And it just kind of goes to show, you know, it hits that finer point home about decision making. I mean, you cannot reflex and make a decision like that if you haven't been exposing yourself to that. And even if it's in the same basic way of just doing a quick drill of searching off a line, or flowing and moving and coming across a victim. Because if you put that question in front of your average guy who is going to a conference and is aggressive as hell and wants to flow water, you know, you put that out there and say you're 20 feet in a building, you come across a victim, and you've maybe got, you know, some velocity smoke. Do you continue flowing? Do you move past? Do you drop the line? What's your communication behind you? You know, and it all bases off area. I mean, the tasks are all the same. They're all the same for all of us. But, you know, how many people do you have behind you? How many people are on the line? Do you actually have a truck company, or is it truly an engine company filling in that role? So when I hear stuff like this, it's relieving, because a lot of times the simple drills, the very simple stuff, can take a very complicated reflex and make it just reactive, make it, you know, I think it's in that realm of, like, recognition, prime decision-making, or OODA loop stuff, you know, like, you just can't reflex without having put that work in. So you said it pretty well, Todd. Just hats off to the crews this morning. It's outstanding, you know?
Well, yeah, Sam just brought up a point that really was a big part of my decision to give up our line, which, like I said, for us, just having dedicated engines and trucks right on top of each other, something we really don't do very often, was the fact that when we got the door and we could hear them, it was floor-to-ceiling smoke, but it wasn't moving with a lot of velocity. So I felt like I had a bead, like, from the size up, the fire was in the rear. It confirmed to me the fire was pretty far away, but it also made me confident that it wasn't running to the vent point we just made quickly. Like, we had a few seconds, and the amount of time it was going to take that second engine to go around the fence to the driveway to get in the front yard and come up the wheelchair ramp onto the front porch and take over wasn't really going to impact and get us in a bad spot. And then they did a great job with the line. I mean, by the time we found the victim and we got back out into that, out of that little alcove of doors, they were going past us with the hose line. So it was, I mean, like I said, I knew the fire was going to go out, but like Sam just said, velocity, and that really came into decision making for me, because I felt like I knew it wasn't going to change on us super, super fast, at least not before that engine company could get that nozzle in inside the building.
Yeah, and I think that you could probably do about 30 teaching points, literally. And again, those are one of those things I think that we need to do a better job of in the fire service, as far as when we're teaching these drills, and we get so drill focused, there are so many finer details, and I've really been preaching during a lot of my classes anymore. There's an attention to detail, recognizing the door, recognizing, and you just said it, the wheelchair ramp, listening to people outside telling you he may still be in there, listening for the voices of somebody yelling for help, you know, all these little things that sometimes can get easily missed, or we're so caught up in the moments that we miss the little things, like recognizing that we don't have this, you know, tremendous push coming out of my bent point. And, all those things, I think, really come into play and need to be more built into our realistic training and getting away from the engine room floor training. And obviously everybody that works with me and knows me knows how passionate and how much I preach that, that the engine room floor is probably hurting us sometimes more than it's helping us in some cases. So those are some things, and we may circle back to some of them. I know we're going to circle back to a few of these things. I want to come back around to Sammy. If you could, I don't think everybody, and I'm sure a lot of people maybe listening or downloading this, aren't a whole, maybe not 100% understanding of what the Illinois Fire Service Institute really is. And if you could kind of maybe give a little more background on that for us and your role with the engine company operations of that.
Yeah, sure. So the Illinois Fire Service Institute, it's right around the corner of 100 years old. It's one of the oldest fire institutions in the country, you know, that's been putting in, especially in the last, I'd say, 30 years, putting out some pretty good work nationally. So IFSI had, you know, it's start just like any kind of state organized, you know, institution where we've got to get our, you know, our basic certifications done. We're went into some really cool places is who they started to attract in by the 80s and 90s. And so I can give you an example on the engine program from, you know, my understanding, the history of where I work. They, local subject matter guys reached out to people from all over the country. And, you know, Fritz and Andy Fredericks are two of them, particularly this gentleman, Dave Clark, from the Illinois Fire Service Institute. He wrote quite a bit for fire engineering, et cetera. They saw the need to hit that, to get out of our bubble. And I think that happens to any area of the country or any organization, is that we become bubbled to our information and what we know. And I think they pioneered some pretty cool programs. So, you know, I think in the early 70s, you know, SCBA were coming around. There was this Jack Rutledge, is a gentleman, Vietnam veteran, who just kind of went all in on SCBA and traveled the state, you know, teaching fire departments on how to work SCBA. Well, this guy is, for our area, one of the originators of the smoke diver program. Now, not, you know, affiliated with Georgia or anything like that. Being was, you know, the Illinois Fire Service Institute took the initiative on things like this, and they added in research. So they added in quite a bit of extensive work with the research arm of the University of Illinois, which is, you know, we're a branch of and a part of the state. And like outside of its regular realm, like the regular realm of state-based education, which I think can be pretty bland, you know, your typical Fire 1, Fire 2, you know, whatever is classified as a technician or whatever. FSI is doing its best, I think, to push that standard a bit up. Now, I think we all get boxed in, and we could probably talk for hours on end about, you know, prepackaged educational, you know, information and standards. But what you have here is an organization that really kind of puts that credibility to the test. So they do quite a bit of work with the FSRI. We actually just had a lead researcher, lead for the UL. Dr. Gavin Horn, over the last few years working with the UL, has been pretty instrumental in a bunch of different research projects. So, you know, IFSI's got its hands in a couple of things, but what it does, it also does it very well. Like, we have a pretty storied RIT program that was started with gentlemen from the city of Chicago. And it just seems to me, when I get to visit other states and not, you know, looking at any other and saying that we're the best or whatever, it's a really, as a taxpayer, It is a it gives me some satisfaction to know that they're using all the resources that the state can give it, and they're using it pretty damn well.
I've got some working knowledge of that, and I've been to multiple academies over the years, and I couldn't agree. I couldn't agree with you more on the, as you were saying it, I actually mute so I didn't, laugh right over top of you, how stagnant some of the academies become, and you nailed it. We get in our little bubble and we spit out canned program after canned program after canned program, and we never reach out. And I love the fact that you guys have reached out to subject matter experts and are looking for more than just what the canned programs have been. Like you said, the firefighter one, the fire officer one, the fire officer two, the fire officer. And I get we have to have some of those standards. And we've had this debate with other guests about raising that bar. But unless more states such as yourselves are willing to raise that bar, I kind of feel we're just going to kind of stay in this very stagnant mindset about, our fire academies and those type of things. So I love what you guys are doing on your side, on what you're kind of leading and doing there at the Fire Service Institute, Sammy. What's your main focus now when you're working with engine companies? I think that's going to roll me into a fire that you were involved in.
Yeah, it's pretty cliche to say it, I guess, but just the brilliance and the basics. What I noticed, and just in relation to my time working in the fire service, I was actually a graduate of the Illinois Fire Service Institute, and again, like any organization, you're going to have stagnation even in the best organizations, and I can recall. And this is, it kind of goes out to a shout out to the engine program. So this was, just 2005, going to their fire academy, instructors who talked about Danny Fredericks, who worked with him directly when they were making the engine program curriculum in 97. And the thing that they would stress to me, the good instructors that I had in my time, was brilliance in the basics. And with the engine program that, when it came back into my hands, and again, it's not to say that anybody messed anything up. I think what happens is when things get passed from hand to hand, you really have to have a history of what that means to pass it off. And I think sometimes when people, leave unexpectedly or leave, hey, I've got obligations with my kids or whatever, the program can get stunted because the information that maybe they were sharing wasn't necessarily documented in a specific way. And so coming from where I was, where, I had good instructors who focused on some brilliance and some basics, by the time I made it back to the line, and started working on the job regularly, those are lost. Those are lost on me in my initial culture. And the one thing that hit me, the more I started getting into it, I actually didn't really start getting into being better at my job until I got hurt pretty bad on the job. And then I realized, for a good amount of my career, I was pretty much a clown. I that's pretty much my line when I say it, when I talk to other instructors or students. But, I looked the part, but did I actually know what the hell I was doing? And the brilliance and the basics wasn't there. I can guarantee you, Anthony's fired today. He's got two young guys, less than, 3 years on together or 2 years. And just by being good at the simple task that they were doing, basic drill, they were able to make, rapid fire decisions and fire off some good work, with some good leadership. And so one of the things I took in seeking out information, because, oftentimes you can be at a stagnant firehouse or stagnant department itself, sought out more information, kind of your standard thing, reached out and, started reaching out to fields and taking the knowledge of Ford or Brush, and ended up realizing that a mentoring captain, City of Dalton, right next to me. He was a part of the early fire service warrior movement, and, you know, like the precursor to a lot of the internet boom of internet, you know, firefighting, you know, social media training. And he kind of like stressed this thing to me and how we would work at fires or how we would work in calls. And so with the engine program, what we started to do with that brilliance was we went back out and we reached out, you know, back. It started taking as many classes as we could. You know, when we would ask somebody to be a part of the program, the first thing we'd say is, you know, what was the last class you took? You know, and if they said, you know, the last class they took was, well, you know, I was listening to myself talk at my last class, they're not for the program. If they were there, yeah, and they were able to say, and if they couldn't even say, you know, water on the fire, because, you know, if for, you know, come from, you know, anywhere outside of being out east, you know, it's gonna cost some dough. And if they had told me they took, you know, I took instructor three because it was there, or like FSI has a lot of free classes that they'll put throughout the state. If they told me a cornerstone program, and even if they hadn't been to any of the big pedigree classes where they were going to learn the highest speed, you know, information, I was looking for that guy, because what we wanted to do was be able to share that information very simply, because sometimes things get a little convoluted, especially in like going back to that thought about the passing of hands and that information. Drills got kind of convoluted. Drills maybe focused on one thing only, you know, and I do believe there's a place for adding in live fire. I don't believe, you know, a program like mine or the Institute, it's not mine, I'm just responsible, but, you know, should be all fire for an iteration of it. You know, maybe there should be steps, which is what we're working on, but we really went back and we focused on, you know, how do you actually understand that line? And that was like the most important thing that we saw that really started to click in people's heads was you get out of your basic fire academy and you have no idea about the hose and nozzle in your hand. And, you know, you can take Dennis Laguerre's class and, like, you know, be very well schooled. You may have to take it 10 times like myself to understand it. But what happens is we treat firefighting like gardening. And I think it's unfortunate, because a large part of the fire service buys hose and nozzles like they would, you know, buying a hose and nozzle for their garden set. And it's not the same. And you got firefighters that make it into leadership roles that don't have that very basic understanding. And how are we going to get it to them? You know, so can everyone make Dennis's class or Brush's class or make it to, you know, HROC or something? They can't. And so our goal right now is to take a look at what we had, the bare bones, and take a look at the best things that the previous program guys had added, but to recognize that, you know, our information in a lot of places was dated, right? Like, take a really good look at yourself and realize, holy crap, the things that I've been saying, the things that I've been taught, it wasn't right. It was half the story. And so my understanding and that bias that I put to it in performance, you know, it was a bunch of BS. And so being able to go back out and say that, you know, go back out and say, this is a foundational step, and this is, we wish you had this in the fire academy, but we're going to correct it here. And so it's been a really good journey, because the bosses that we have there have been, they've been excellent. You know, they provide a lot of support for that vision. They provide a lot of support in me hiring in more guys. And, quite frankly, you know, being able to just look back on yourself and say, yeah, this is something we can do better. I think for any organization, that's super important. So,
yeah, and I love everything you said. I want to kind of circle back to something you said a couple of times and get a little feedback from Anthony on this as well. Sammy said on at least three times just in about brilliance in the basics. And not, you know, take the day obviously out of the mix, Anthony, but just overall from both, you know, your time on the job, your teachings and things like that. Kind of, you know, talk a little bit about that, what you think the meaning of that really is for you.
Listen, it's something that's been driven home my whole career from the the senior guys I came up under, that it was always don't go out looking, get a little bit of everything until you've actually become a fireman and learned it. And their biggest thing was, until you can stretch a line, move the line while you're flowing, force a door, throw ladders, do a search, get somebody up off the floor and out of a window, until you could do those things that they considered very basic to getting our initiatives accomplished, then you didn't need to be focusing elsewhere. You needed to get that down so you could be fully functional on the fire ground. And it was driven home by not just one person. That's what we were taught when we came in through the senior guys. And when I came in, we still had a lot of senior guys, a lot of 30 and 40 year guys you'd be around. You're always around 20 year guys, and we're a younger department now. But to see that much experience, and that's all they focused on, was you got to get this, and we're going to beat it home in your head until you can't. It's not that you did it right. You can't get it wrong. We used to hear that all the time with all the basics. Yep. Anytime they shut the projects down, it was like, hey, we're going up there. You're going to go force 50 doors, and they're going to be real doors, and then we'll just, you know, board it back up, and they'll tear the projects down and build new. And you just – that's what they focused on. They really could care less about what you knew about something you thought was, like, advanced, so it made you – like you knew something special, because they were like, if you don't know the basics, I can't rely on you yet. You have to be able to do these simple tasks without a ton of thought of, how do I stretch this line? How do I force this door? Like, I've heard it a million times, like, I don't want the baton twirler at the door. If you got to force the door, when you walk up, there shouldn't be thought to how you set your tool. And that always kind of stuck with me. Like, it needs to become, we say muscle memory, but those simple tasks shouldn't be taking up all of your brain's function to figure out how to do the task, because you're no longer, you know, processing the scene of what's going on and things like that. So it's something that's always been driven home by senior guys to me. And then as I spent more time, and I'm still 14 years, it's not a lot of time. It's just been reinforced through all my experiences that's always what seemed to make our scenes go good, was always someone or a group that was just good at the very basics. They got a line in place quickly. They made the seat of the fire. The truck got the ladder up and got through the window, those kinds of things. So it was always kind of driven home both through them, and then as I gained more experience, that's what made our fires go good. Our fires that went really good were the guys that were really good in the basics, and all the companies there were really good in the basics, because it made that stuff just go very smoothly. And then when something came up, it wasn't hard to adapt, because everyone was able to do whatever they needed to get done.
Yeah, and I love that you said everything you said. Everything Sam said is so spot on. I preach a lot of it in instructor development trainings, that I don't care what the fire is. Everything we do at the fire scene, most of the time, the majority of our fires are mastering the basic skill sets. From, we're going to put our gear on every time. We're going to have our mask on every time. We're going to have our we're going to be stretching a line every time. We're going to be flowing water every time. In most cases, we're going to be forcing one door, two doors, or throwing ground ladders. Most fires do not take anything outside of our – it's kind of taking all our basic skills and doing them all at once. And that's one thing I'm just a huge believer in. You can stretch a line in your T-shirt and shorts on the bay floor 1,000 times, but it's totally different when you get to the front yard. It's got 3 parked cars, 3 gates that you've got to overcome. And that's where I think you go back to what Sam was saying, brilliance in the basics. Those basic skill sets still work, and they will overcome even even what looks like a huge obstacle to some. Guys who have mastered the basic skill sets, that's not an issue for them. They'll overcome a gate, a car, whatever the case may be, and they'll never miss a beat. They just never miss a beat. And I think kind of circle back to one thing that stuck out with Rowett that I jotted down listening to him, was the senior guys. And that's probably maybe the hardest thing to overcome right now, because we have seen so many of our senior people now have either moved way up the chain and aren't at the line position anymore, or they've retired on. So that's where, you know, obviously, Ro, you're passing some of that on, and I'm sure Sam is in his organization, but we've got to find a way to keep that information flowing all the time, so the next 20-year-old who's going to be the 40-year guy down the road can be passing that on all the time. And that's how all of us came up. all three of us came up from senior guys showing us what to do and in some cases not what to do, probably more so than what to do. A lot of, you know, the senior guy in the front yard just shaking his head at me. I was like, what?
Yeah. I thought I was doing it right.
And come here. And they were always good. I mean, they always took that opportunity. I think we need to do a better job of promoting that as we're all moving up and moving on throughout our careers. Sam, I want to ask you, and I know this is going to be hard because we don't – I've seen the photographs from a fire from several months back that you were involved in where you had – and it, the first when I first saw it and kind of read about it, I thought about, you know, those high-rise fires where you see that fire just eating up 40 stories on the outside of the building. Well, you guys had something, not a 40-story high-rise, but something very similar to that. And then how you had to use, obviously, solid decision-making. Then you had to use skill sets on pushing the hallway. If you can kind of, I know, you know, that's the one huge disadvantage with just, you know, on-air podcasts. Like, we can't show you the pictures I've seen, which are, you know, pretty damn impressive on arrival there. Kind of walk our the people listening a little bit about that fire, what occurred, and how it kind of came about that you guys were able to put what looked like a pretty solid stop on a lot of damn fire.
Yeah, yeah. So so I was off. It was a Memorial Day this year. And just to give you, you know, the mindset of it, just imagine a really beautiful Memorial Day with a nice wind that's going to happen to be coming off the side where the fire of origin is going to be, where basically a seven-story multi-building. So I think fire engineering is going to be I listened to Dugan and Gustin and Jimmy Davis do a podcast. They touched on a little bit, and I think Dugan's doing an article on it. So I think there should be some good stuff coming out with the magazine. But just imagine, you know, that are connected by common hallways, but they're all kind of staggered off each other. And you basically have a outside fire, exterior fire start off on a second floor balcony that communicates to seven. And that happened because every sliding glass door above two was open because of the nice weather and the nice gust of wind. And so this fire basically comes in for the crews, you know, as a reported structure fire, and they're turning around a corner, and it's like, you know, you always hear the stories, oh, you know, the flames are, you know, 50 foot tall, but they work, you know, they turn the corner and they see it, you know, they've got fire extending from two to seven. Basically that communicates to, you know, every interior floor. So this is, and it's a hell of a thing that these guys did initially. I come into it later because I come in on the callback, but so initially the first new engine makes the lobby, and their report of it too. And so you have to put this in perspective because these guys have been getting a lot of training the last two. I think my tenure for the training office has been about 2 years. We've been assigning the UL Academy certificate classes. And so they've been getting a lot of training, just cognitive training on flow paths and understanding smoke and, you know, et cetera. So they reported velocity, pressurized smoke on the floor below the fire in the lobby. And so they've got multiple people running out of this lobby. They call for, you know, their first alarm, and the crew sets up on that first floor. They make a stairwell, and right here, you know, and this is pretty much the big tell for the fire. And I think out of a lot of the teaching moments, for smaller departments, not only, you know, just bigger, but smaller departments, understanding of how much your preparation of what you understand could happen, how that can be thrown out of the window by, you know, one unchecked problem, which was a stairwell. And so at the stairwell on two, they stretch, they pull two and a half. We just actually went to two and a quarter, but we were having two and a half at on an inch of 316. So the guys were able to float 300 GPM. And they said it was just pushing out of the cracks of the door. They opened the door, just black velocity smoke, and they open up. And these guys made a hallway. My estimate, they probably pushed about 20 feet, maybe 15 feet to the fire room. And so the fire communicated from the exterior to the interior of the second floor, and that was their initial attack. They actually, so my understanding, too, is that that fire unit was a hoarder. And so that unit is just rocking. They get a fair knock, and, I mean, they're pushing. And, again, you know, like keep stressing this, is we've been hitting stretching lines. You know, you got the guy who works for the state, you know, kind of take it a point, is, you know, that I should be the one stretching too. And so our guys stretch quite a bit. So anyway, these guys like gangbusters, they start getting a knock on this fire, and they make it exterior. So I want you to imagine this. You can, you know, if, when fire engineering puts the pictures out, if you look up Calumet City Memorial Day fire, the second floor, that second floor balcony actually led out to a parking garage. So there's a flat roof parking garage, membrane roof, that the crews, you know, they cross over the balcony onto this flat roof, and they start directing the stream upwards because they've got a hell of a ton of exterior fire. And they knock it. I mean, no lie, the pictures that you see is that first new hose line, 300 gallons per minute, engine 316s, knocked it. They knocked it. And what we ended up finding out after this fire, and I can just say it now, is there became this issue of water. Became this issue of water on two main breaks that happened in this loop system. Real quick, sorry.
Residential fire alarm. 547 Saxton Avenue.
Not me. So, right now, they end up losing water as more crews started to come in. And so the best way that I can say this was the fire had already communicated to the interior, you know, 2 all the way to 7. And so here's this massive knock. They lose water, and it just starts kicking back up again. You've got this wind that's coming out of the east. It's blowing right into their direction, and it just gets everything back going. And so what those guys end up doing, so I've talked about this before, but I was at home, and I was doing bedtime with the kiddos. And I'm sure you guys understand bedtime is the best. That's my special time with the kiddos. And I saw a page come in for an all call, and I just kind of, you know, I'll go when I'm done, finish up. I look at it and I see what's going on. And so we mentioned G-Ron. I see a text from G-Ron, and it's like, hey, we're available for a special. I know the building. I've been there for a fire, but Ron's probably about 20 minutes to the east of us. And so I start looking at some of the pictures people are sending. I start heading in and tell my wife that I'm going to head out there. And, like, so no lie, you know, the pictures that were coming up on social media, that Citizen app or whatever the hell that is, people were sending me stuff. And it was still ripping. So, Dave, that first hour is nothing short of amazing. So, I think you might feel for this, Todd, you know, being on the job, you're pretty similar to my fire chief now, Chief Bacher. He was out of town for the weekend. Now, this guy is ate up for the job. He's easily one of the best captains I got to work with, you know, as a fireman, and he's not there. And so the deputy chief also was out, you know, so covering. I'm extremely grateful for all the crews. We ended up getting Chief from Dalton, this gentleman by the name Chief McCain, and the initial response for them, so they had fire on every floor, every stair well, and every hallway was compromised, and not just compromised with some haze, compromised with pretty thick smoke that was chugging and burning at different capacities on different floors. And crews, as they started making their way up and organizing, they were going on bells, just setting up and starting to put their line out and starting to put, you know, water on the fire. And like, so this is like, here's this thing for like looking back on this is, one, thankfully no firefighters got killed. Unfortunately, we lost a civilian on the 7th floor, but the first two crews, those first crews that started responding to this alarm, they were able to put in play, you know, 4 more hose lines. And in between that, you know, several maydays go out from firefighters, you know, losing air. We had a crew from Dew Hose Line guys after they went out for a blow to get a bottle. They went back in to set up on a line, I think was on 4, and they run into a Mayday in a stairwell where a firefighter had run out of air, and they bring him out doing mask to mask. Now, you consider the amount of rescue that were going on the outside, and off the top of my head, I don't want to fudge the numbers, but it's definitely over, 10 or 12 that were getting made off either balconies or, people holding in place and crews bringing them out. It's quite a bit. And one of the things that kind of took me back, outside of where I was able to jump in, but Dugan had said it was, in his career in the FDNY, he'd never done, more than a few bottles. And the guys there, the average on the model bottles between 4 and 6 bottles, which was, it was outstanding. These guys were beat to hamburger and they kept working. So just on my end, I make it back to the station and tried doing the right thing at first, which is, put a company together, make sure that we're getting guys coming in on the callback. A lot of guys were having good times for Memorial Day, so they weren't able to come in. We've got a lot of new guys. We got a lot of new guys that don't know that they could come in. So I was calling them, getting them in. And a pal from another city, he basically comes up to me. He's like, hey, man, are you going to stay here? And I'm, good for the department. They should probably have one of our guys there. And he's like, you've ever been a, 5-alarm fire? I said, no. He said, you should probably go. And I said, you're right. Because he had the station. He was going to be one of the fill-in companies. So ended up organizing an engine crew. And so, for this, and I will, it was war stories and all that other stuff on training, on the training side. The guy who showed up to be the pipe man for my crew is this my buddy Mikey, and he's my right hand here at the department, and he's my left hand at the engine company program. We go to classes all over the country together. We're always sending each other articles. Mikey's now out in the bay more than I've ever been, stretching hose lines and just immersing himself in it. And so I have Mikey coming in, and I got another pal coming in, and I'm an engineer, but I step to that. I'll be a step-up officer when need be. So I've got an engine crew, and we make our way up. We end up taking a company vehicle out there. We go on the stage, and we head up, and we start checking in. And, an hour and a half into this fire, there are still spot fires on multiple floors, but 7 is still going pretty well. And I think at that time there were maybe 3 or 4 units going. There was still, I believe, a report of a victim trapped on that floor. And we got tasked to get a line up there. And so just checking in with the boss. And here's the thing, the boss at the area I was at, we get to work together. He's actually, I got to give him a little shout, Paul, Captain Long. He's here tonight covering me to do this. But I feel like I have a lot of trust in him, and he trusts me. He says, do X, Y, Z. I say, I can do it like this. And he says, go, I'll get you the support. And so we manufacture a line. The best thing we got is a gated Y. We've got a 2.5, and we're able to get one of our engine 316 tips. So we make it up. We hook up on 6, and here's this thing where, I've had 2 fires at this building. It's called the Parker River Oak. They had 2 fires there in the past, and they were only single floor fires or single unit fires confined to a single floor. And SOG-wise, everything gets hit, staging below, so the way the line gets set up, dirty or clean hallway, EMS, the floor below, communication's great. All that fell apart, within that first half hour. The way I talked about it with another guy, is like trying to do 7 house fires on the same block, but still try to remain in command of one. There just wasn't the resources for the bosses to put guys on every floor and to set up those areas of refuge. It was almost like it was winning by attrition. And so by the time we make it up, we were one of the last companies actively working on a floor, and we were fresh. The guys that were on my crew, on that crew working that day, probably on their 3rd or 4th bottle, and they were still doing a lot of different work. Anyway, we set up on 6, and it was like one of those things, and I mentioned, and I learned that at HROC, talking about reflex time, that time that you can get that line in service as you manufacture it and can get it to where it needs to be. It all flows, it's probably cliche, it all flow, blah, blah, blah. But here was the thing where the configuration of the hallway, for instance, as the guys made the hookup and you know, having to use a gated Y instead of a gate valve, the way that went, there wasn't any point where I said the line goes left or goes right, like we've done in training. There wasn't any point where, no, that doesn't, you know, because I don't like being that guy. We all know that guy on the drill, on the fire ground, that's using every moment to be the training moment. Like, you know,
yeah,
you should just be doing your job. The men did their job. I did my job. And as we started to make our way up, that line, like, it still makes me happy to think about how it looked as it stretched up to seven. Now, seven's the last floor that we were going to be able to reach. So, you know, extending up and, you know, opening that door, seeing that smoke push and hearing some of the traffic there. So at that time, and I think the pictures and the video will be good for it, and I'll try to share them with you guys, is that you had quite a few massive streams going on from the outside. You had, you know, a tower ladder, you know, trying to get water on it that's hitting the building but is not getting any effect in the units itself. But it looks pretty, right? They called a special for Chicago, and they brought their huge deluge gun. And so that's getting set up. But still, you know, that issue with that exterior water, that is, you know, it's that misnomer of what we think we see as opposed to what we need to happen. Being in that hallway and seeing that line get in place. Now, Mikey, again, he's an alum of, you know, several other programs, and he is dialed in on, you know, Aaron's foundation. He starts flowing and moving on a 2.5. And, you know, the guy who ended up setting up at the standpipe, they tuned it. Like, I wasn't even thinking about that. And that's a big deal that we talk about in training all the time. It's not about bleeding. It's about making sure that as a tradesman, the line is effectively flowing to actually make the desired effect of the line that you have. Well, then why the hell have it, right? Why have a 2.5 and an inch and 3/16 if it's going to be under or over pumped? So Mikey tunes it, says it's great, and he just starts working this hallway. And, you know, to be behind and just, you know, again, it's a newer role for me, stepping up as a company boss or an engine boss. I spent most of my time as a fireman and as a paramedic before that, firefighter paramedic on the box. And so, you know, stepping into this and having had worked with these three guys drilling and then the supplemental companies, for them to work with us, our act was put together. There wasn't a question about what we should do. And so as that push got made, the supplemental task, hey, move right, pull the ceiling, do this, do that, blah, blah, blah. You know, it all kind of flowed together, no matter the amount of, and I won't say disorganization, but dysfunction because of the extent of the fire, if that makes any sense. Anyway.
I won't hold you just for a second, Sammy. I want you to come back to something. And again, it's more for listeners to understand. You guys were operating off a Y, and you didn't have any kind of inline gauge or anything to really let you know what you were about to get on the end of that line. And you mentioned, and you said the word tuning. And I want you to explain that, because I know some guys have never heard that, you know, north, south, east, west terminology. Just kind of explain how you guys determined that you guys were afraid to make that push.
Yeah, so the way we explained it, and we talk about it in the engine program quite a bit, like and it's inspired by all the classes we took. None of this was original. It's all stolen, you know, but our foundation of it is to say, you know, a plumber, an electrician, they're going to be able to, you know, if I were bending pipe or if I were sweating pipe, I can look at things and know that they're right or they're wrong. You know, buddy who taught me plumbing, you know, taught me by, you know, by looking at your flux, looking at the pipe itself, you can see and you can feel or you can smell or you know, as a trade, you understand it. So we related tuning to the amount of time, you know, we hear the criticism all the time about the parking lot trainings, blah, 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 blah. And there's a place for it and there's not a place for it. But the amount of time that we spend teaching our guys, all right, we're going to pump you at exactly 50 PSI at the tip. Now we're going to kink a line. Now you're short. Now we're going to pump it low. Now we're going to, you know, if we had an old engine that used to, you know, dip pressure because of the governor, now you're going to get a dip. So tuning for us meant that making sure that line was set as being effective. The line was actually set. So, you know, getting away from that thing that we learned in the academy, because you pose that to most guys, they say, oh, you know, you open the line to bleed the air out. And you don't want to bleed the air out towards the direction of the fire because you're going to feed it. And, bro, are you okay? Whatever. Well, let me show you. We're actually feeling it. We're feeling it, you know, and the condition of the smoke wasn't well. So you're not going to see, you know, 50-foot stream or this nice compact stream. You had to feel it. And Brian, just on that small communication, Brian knew that Mikey was going to open it in that area. He was going to put water in that area, use the most that he could, but he was going to let him know more or less. And it was awesome. So if that makes sense, you know, you're tuning it for effect.
Yeah. Yes. That's I just wanted you to come back around to that because I think I understood what you were talking about, but I wanted to make sure, and I love the point that, and I hope that people who teach or you're teaching within your organization or you're teaching just at your company level go through some of those evolutions because not everything – and every fire, we're going to be able to dial up the perfect 50 PSI,
right.
The perfect nozzle reaction,
right.
The beautiful compact. Not every fire is going to be that way. So firefighters, especially to gain experience, and I love that part of your story more than anything, is the experience and their training really combined together to be able to feel that line and go, yeah, this is it. We're good. We can do this now. I feel everything. So I think that's a huge thing that we can be teaching when we're flowing water. Not everything is going to be the perfect set, and you got to be able to feel that and be able to communicate, hey, we need to dial that up, dial that down, just solely based on feel.
Right. Yeah. And I can, like, even like thinking about it, I can see Mike at the door, and I'm on the stairwell, and I'm looking down right, and I can see Brian at the standpipe itself. And it wasn't like, and I love that you said that. It wasn't like they sat there and was like, oh, this feels like, you know, we're flowing 300. No, Mikey found it where he needed to. He got it where, and it worked. And you could see things like the kinks in the line. You could see it. It just was operating where it should. And mm-hmm. and here's the thing. He that's what he does anytime he opens the line. It doesn't, you know, like that is his goal. And what we've learned, what I take from that is that we were taking the things that we didn't understand before. And the things that, like, all of the classes that we took, what they started introducing us was how much we didn't really know and, like, that winning ugly thing. And if you can get something close, right, you, who knows how hot that damn torch is for a plumber, right? I'm sure there's a quantified number. But if you can feel it and you know it, you know you're not going to waste your flux. You know you're not going to waste time, you know, busting up pipe. And it has to be the same with us because that's how that push gets made, I think.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And so you guys are down the hallway, obviously doing a lot of moving and flowing and getting down to the, you know, to getting the rooms at the absolute the tower your outside streams aren't getting to. And I'm begging you that if I miss it, because I get fire engineering, all those magazines, I get all the digital stuff now, but please let me know or pass on to me when you think that article is going to be and the what issue, and so we can share that, make sure that everybody takes, you know, those kind of articles can be just incredible learning tools and drills can be developed for those kind of articles at the company level in your own firehouses, big, small, medium, doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, if I can like really push that for what I think I learned the most out of that, it comes from like two things really, because it's easy for any of the guys to poke and say, you know, command did this wrong, you know, oh, this would have happened, you know, at times you're going to be overwhelmed to the extent of your event. Right. And unfortunately, you know, fortunately, larger cities can overwhelm with some other force. This fire particularly could happen really in any city, you know, from smallest to biggest. If you have any kind of apartment style building where you have multiple floors on fire, which can happen, like I would have never even thought that, you know, you see Grand Fidel or anything like that. And well, that's a 40 story building, like you said. And to really now from learning from that is to understand that it does fall apart, right? The SOG that you may have in the end, you know, setting up the perfect floor below, setting up the line in this fashion, setting up this in this fashion, that can all get thrown out of the window in a heartbeat. And that ability to on that action. And I think, and again, I go back to Chief McCain on it, it was just doing smart firefighting. It was handling what you had for, you know, it wasn't extending yourself to seven steps ahead. It was putting yourself at the place that you could directly affect. And I couldn't appreciate that more, you know, because things can and will fall apart.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a there's a very good chance that anybody listening on their way to work over the next couple of weeks and they stumble across this, that may happen that very night that you're on shift and be able to adapt, overcome, having that feel. All those things are just huge. When you look at everything that you just told us about the fire, the pictures I've seen, the little bit I knew about it until just now, absolutely incredible. And again, sometimes we forget even that the work our lawn guys truly are doing. I mean, that was yeoman type work where you got getting, you know, two bottles, you're already like, oh my God, but you start talking about three and four bottles. I think I've done two fires where I was on my fourth bottle and didn't quite even finish out the fourth bottle before I had to tap it. And I just couldn't go anymore. So yeah, those are not everyday fires, but it always amazes me when I see firefighters will push past that point if need be. And it sounds like they didn't have much of an option on that particular incident you just described to us.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny even thinking about that, because I think about what happened with me and then I think about another guy, you know, and especially on the leadership angle, especially on, you know, the engine or truck or just firemanship in general. You know, one of the stories out of that was that seventh floor, there was an attempt at the rescue, you know, several units on fire, one side of it's making a push, and deputy chief from Homewood and his crew on a ladder truck tried making a rescue on that floor. I don't have the details, but basically these guys got to end up boogieing out. And I relate that to what happened with me, where the guys I was with, you know, we ended up doing quite a few bottles ourselves and checking in on that. So there's a tradition in the South, you know, South Suburbs, Chicago, Gary metro area of, you know, we don't have a lot of staffing. And I think a lot of people don't have a lot of staffing, but, you know, working, you know, when I first got on, you know, doing more than three bottles, four bottles, you know, was not unheard of. And so looking back on that, you know, there's a certain amount of pride that I had about putting out that fire. But now reflecting on it in my role as I start to step up as a company boss or get promoted, hopefully in the next year, is realizing that I owe so much more to the men and women, you know, to be thinking about them, not just some of the objectives. And now I get it. Like, we're all aggressive. We'll all, you know, want to, you know, the people who listen to things like this, people who want to do things like this, they have that same mindset. But I think the problem there was my inability to see that those guys will beat themselves up the hamburger into a, you know, a hazardous situation. And at some point, you know, and it was eye-opening for me, you know, to see that If I wasn't going to make a decision to back out, it wasn't going to be able to happen because those guys would have stuck with me regardless. And yeah, that's one of the things that I take back. Is, you know, you continue to call for those resources. You know, you even if it's a rural department, you know, continue calling and calling and calling, because at some point, the extent of that you put somebody through, you know, their core temperature and this and that, what good are you at your fifth bottle? And then you're still working, I'm sure. And I'm sure, you know, aggressive firefighting will always be that. There's no reason to send somebody to the glue factory. There's no reason to not realize, holy crap, you know, you said yeoman work. I mean, it's just brutal, you know? And so learning about how important that is, how important that responsibility is, it's not just about the fire. It's also about the men. You know, yes, it's always been about the civilians. Yes, it's always been about putting it out. and now I'm responsible for you. I'm not in charge, you know?
Yeah, no, I love that. It's always amazed. It still amazes me even today. If we take that step back like you just did, and you see past just the fire and just the work the guys did, but all the other lessons learned about, you know, and you're right, guys will, they'll go. I mean, I've only worked with a very small group of guys that ever tapped. Most time you got to be the adult supervision in the room and make them tap and make them go take that blow. Cause they won't do it.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So I love that. I'm looking forward to you learning more about that. You know, when that article comes out, I love that Dugan's involved with it because his perspectives are definitely some of my favorite, listening to Mike and you know, being around Mike on several events over the last several years and just sitting back. I don't even say anything. I just let Mike talk, and I'm sitting there going, man, I wonder if he'd be a fan if I start writing all this shit down that he's telling me. So I'm always blessed to be around guys like that. And always kind of walk away feeling a little bit smarter, but sometimes I walk away feeling a little bit stupider about myself.
Well, yeah, I think that couldn't be any more true to say, you know, the older you get, the more you realize you didn't know, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I'm even looking at, you know, I've been taking a couple notes just talking and even thinking about Anthony's fire. It's like, you know, the amount of information that is out there by senior men and like some kind of it's a magical time that we can connect like this, because I would have never been able to talk to, you know, Anthony. I wouldn't be able to have a conversation with you. You know, I would have had those guys in my area. I have quite a few, but, you know, you end up getting that saturated information by a vet like that, which is you can fill up volume, you know.
Yeah. Hey, Sammy, check your connection. We got a little bit of static and a little bit of breakup just for a few seconds on you, sir.
Is that on my end? Sorry.
Yeah, I think it was. So let me circle back and to something else he said. I wanted to kind of go with Anthony on this, because I know what he teaches. I've been teaching with him for several years now. What were your thoughts about what? I love this. I actually write this down as he was telling the story. Feeling that blow, feeling that pressure. You know, I love the way he. I hadn't heard that term in a very long time from being up, you know, that part of the country. Keeping the line. What were your thoughts about that?
Throw at. Yeah, I thought it just like when he said it, like it just screamed professionalism. Like you have to truly know your craft and know your equipment to be able to sit there and make sure, especially we've seen the pictures and we see what they were up against, to not just rush but to do things the right way, to make sure, not that it would have been doing it wrong to just take the line and maybe I had too much water. But or it was a little under pump, but you thought that might be what you want. But to take the few seconds to make sure it's right, that everything's just the way you want it, and that really takes not only knowledge but time. You can't just get a feel for things without putting the time in. So it shows professionalism on knowing your job, but also that just shows the amount of time that went in to actually perfecting and mastering a craft. That's what, as soon as he said it, that's what popped into my mind. Like, it was just professionalism the minute he said it.
Yeah.
Right on, 100%.
100%. I love that. I think it's something that all of us, all the instructors out there, need to take to heart when we're teaching classes about having that, you know, not the perfect setting, but how does that feel to you? What are you feeling here? What could we do better? What would you want better? And I think those are great points that we should be, you know, really could be sharing, you know, as we're out and about and as we're doing classes. So, yeah, I'm definitely found that very, very interesting and loved every bit of that. And got like a half page of notes I've been jotting down, just listening to everything we've been talking about already. But I always have notes. I usually have, I got so much paper on my desk, I have to organize all these notes. I just keep making notes and sticking them in a file, going, okay, I won't come back to that. So let me kind of get us on something else here. And because of the background of everybody, you know, on this particular call, I want to start with Roe on this because his perspective at the company level, and then obviously Sammy's perspective at the Fire Service Institute. I think we can, you know, kind of really see some things here. And I'll start with Anthony. The new challenges, and when I say new challenges, it's not new challenges in the training environment, but new challenges as a whole for the fire service, you know, with training and all of the other stuff. There's been a lot of unbelievable stories here lately on rescues. I, of course, obviously, I'm a major fan, supporter of firefighterrescuesurvey.com and always looking for those. But we've had quite a few tragedies over the last couple of months of civilian loss of life. But what do you think some of our newest challenges are going to be over the next, not just this upcoming year, but over the next couple of years? I don't want to get into 20 years. I'm thinking more, what are some of our newest challenges you see in the next 2 and 3 years, Roette?
I think two things, one on kind of our end and then more on the end of what we're responding to now, and that's on our end is the benefit and the kind of downfall of the just massive amount of information that's out there, and especially junior guys, if no one's helping them kind of weed through that information and see, you know, maybe this just isn't actually right and someone just posted it online and there's no one vetting it, or someone would be able to say, yeah, man, that looks great, but, you know, maybe that's not going to work in our environment. Let's go try it, but this was probably working better in our environment. This is why we do it this way. And being able to kind of help them vet through that process of what information is out there. So I think that's kind of on our end, a challenge that we've already been dealing with for a couple of years that's going to continue. But then I also think the post-COVID world of a lot of people didn't return back to work. They're working from home now. And now we've got a lot more people occupying buildings during all hours of the day when we used to expect them to be at work. Or I think you're going to start seeing more of these buildings that they're mixed-use buildings, and people are basically – their life is in that building. They work in that building. They've got their – they do their shopping in that building, their gyms in that building, and kind of most of their life revolves around that building. And it's just kind of changing some of the expectations of what we have of, you know, hours of the day, people are at work, and things like that have been kind of our experience, but also it is taught in the book and you do hear it. And now in that post-COVID world where during COVID people were staying home from work due to COVID, and now a lot of businesses are working a four-hour work week or a lot more people working from home, and it's kind of changed up that expectation for us. And now the residential fire is more of an occupied building, more hours of the day, if that makes sense the way I said it.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. What do you think is some of the new challenges when it comes to the training environment?
I think it's really finding a way to get through to people. Not the just, hey, man, you got to do it. This is the way we do it, and you got to do it that way isn't really going to work anymore. I'm not that way. I'm going to ask why. Me and you have talked about this a ton of times. Like, you're just going to engage me more, but you have to be able to find a way to get across your message to people and also understand that maybe it's not always that they have to find a different way to receive your message. Sometimes maybe you need to meet them in the middle and have a better way or adjust your way for their personality to put your message out there so that they can understand it. You can get it, the information to them, and then get them to go out and actually master the skill set. I think that's still something we're dealing with. Everyone always says the generational issues. I think it's more of a mentality of the way teaching is now, and like that you learn through school. I think at my age, I was probably taught a little differently in school than you were, and that leads to me being able to receive information different. And when I came in, it was just, hey, this is the way it is, and I had to kind of adapt to that. And that worked for me. Like that's through sports. That's just the way I kind of understood. So I was good with it. I think today you're having more people where you have to kind of change the way you deliver the message to them. And it's not that it's an issue on their end or an issue on the senior guy's end, but we do have to find a way to understand people learn differently and be able to make those two, the receiving and the actual putting the information out there and putting the message to them to where it does come together. Because at the end of the day, we can fight a generational thing or he doesn't understand or this, that, and other thing. If we're not getting the message across, we're not being able to provide the service that we ultimately want to. So we have to find a way to bridge that understanding to where we can continue to pass on the way the senior guys did for us. It's just that we have to sometimes maybe adjust the way we put that message out there.
Awesome. I love everything you were saying. And I want to throw that same question right back to you, Sammy.
Yeah. I think one of the bigger things just affecting us going forward is it's going to be the massive amount of inexperience. I was thinking about that today. Shift I come on today, I am the step-up officer. I've really only done this a little under a year now. I am the oldest guy in my station at 42 years old. And right now, just below on the department, we've got a third of the department that is got less than two, maybe less than 3 years experience. And so that inexperience in itself, it relates to a lot of things. I think it's an opportunity, and it can be a really big problem because, you know, the cultural norms of the guys that I didn't get along with in the past, I saw that as that was a different kind of maybe the cancer that you used to have in any of the departments where the way I can describe them, I'm sure you might be able to think of them. You know, it would have been the guy who cares more about what they do on their days off than what they're doing at work. And they're just the fireman and they know what they're doing. And that's a really hard person to reach. That said, when you've got that person in your organization years ago, I think we're losing that person, but we're getting experience and understanding of what this job should mean. We're like, you know, the heaviest influences on social media, where guys constantly want to post things or do things or want to get seen. I think that's one part of it because I love that guys share. I love that guys care that they want to do things. But there is a big part of this when it comes to instruction is actually understanding the knowledge. And Anthony hit on it, that there's so much information out there, that there's so much that you can have access to, and that information isn't vetted. So, and I relate that when we talk in our class with the Institute or we do training here, that like foundationally firefighting is very, very simple. You know, there's painted pictures of guys pinning 2.5-inch hose lines, right? Because it works. Scientifically, it works. You can talk to Dennis and Dennis will tell you 100% why it works. But what you have are people who have half an understanding of something. And when they have half an understanding of something and they apply it, they'll get like a bias, a cognitive bias. And what they bring back, you know, some good information is some good information. But I think there's this thing, and I can't really quite put my finger on it, but it's this, it's like a dysfunction. And it revolves around how the firehouse, this morning's a great example. It was like the years of kind of putting up with stuff in training. You know, I think most people who do training understand this. You take quite a bit of grief, you know, changing the culture towards one way or another. This morning we did a firefighter CPR drill. We're building up for RIT operations for the end of the year. And Jason did it, you know, the guys talking amongst themselves, guys going over skills themselves, the guys taking the skills and saying, well, this worked and this didn't work. It was all based on a fact. And the guys that were participating in it were very versed in their simple understanding of it, how CPR works, how to get somebody out of their gear, why you're turning on the bypass book, why our SCBA works a specific way. And, you know, in the past it had been, well, you just take it off a guy. You just flow water. And you just cut a hole. And maybe that senior guy would have had that information very well put in their head, but they couldn't share it. What I worry about is an inexperienced guy trying to fake that information, trying to be a fly on the wall in a group of, you know, meat eating, you know, heavy hitters. It's kind of hard. You have to keep up to be that person. But I think in that regard, you know, you're starting to see it a little more. And it's hard to see in our environment because you go to conferences and you surround yourselves with people that are ate up and all into the job. But there is a group, you know, that really kind of makes fun of that. There is a part of this where, you know, that isn't important. And it's swinging back around. I think everything is cyclical. All of a sudden, you know, in the last 10 years, guys have done a lot of work to understand, hey, what Ray McCormack has been saying is important. What Ray was saying when, you know, he was saying, talking about pushing fire and this whole thing that happened with the UL and the understanding of what those research papers meant and what Ray was willing to do and put himself out there for, you know, that environment that we have like a very contentious environment. And so to kind of put that in perspective with everything, because I think it's a problem with the fire service and fire instructor in general is finding this place where we talk about warrior culture, and that was something I was really, really, you know, hell bent on trying to adhere to. And like in recent months, I've been putting it together because it was something I was exposed to with Ron in teaching with him. He mentioned, you know, carrying a hose line like a gentleman or a lady, you know, and, you know, I was listening with you guys with Corley, you know, he's talking about fields and language and everything, how important it is. It's so extremely important. And but him phrasing that, it meant the world, kind of forming this thought, even like now, you know, being a gentleman at a fire, being a gentleman at training, you know, a gentleman instructor isn't that guy at Firefighter One that is yelling, you know, you can't do this, dot, 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 dot. This, you know, this, I don't really care who can explain this to me because I was in the Army. And I know how the Army, and I've read how the Army structures its basic training. I do not know any true structure in the fire service where yelling gets results. I really don't. And, you know, I hear it's a softer generation that they can't, you know, take yelling or something like that. I got yelled at a lot as a kid. I got, you know, whatever. What I can tell you, though, is that yelling at me when it came out of, you know, being able to apply a Halligan bar, as opposed to working with Sam Hiddle and taking his class and working with a gentleman, per se, the courtesy and the honor that you have when you go to a conference or you work with an instructor with a state organization that isn't there for their gain. They're not there for their social media gain. They're not there for the money that comes with it, because I know both of you guys can attest to it. You're not going to make, you know, millions out of it. Some guys can make some money in what they do, but you're not going to be a millionaire doing this. You're there, you're spending weekends away from your family because you genuinely care. And I hope in that inexperience of it, that it's not glamorized, oh man, I can do this or do that and post this or post that, but still just be as complacent as anybody else, because you're kind of just virtue signaling. You're kind of just putting it out there, but you're not doing it. And so my hope is that instructors realize that they're in a chivalrous service, because, you know, reading what that definition of gentleman is, it's, you know, chivalrous, courteous. It's not just somebody in a top hat. It's there's an honor behind it, and guys get it. There have been guys, the senior men and women that I've worked with, that were ladies and gentlemen. They were the people that didn't shout. My buddy Danny, the guy who was with Fire Service Warrior, here's this gentleman that was so calm in instructing and so calm on fire calls that it made everything better, even though he says, well, I was paddling like a duck underwater. You know, you had no idea how my wheels were spinning. But, you know, that happens to us when we instruct. I've seen instructors fall apart once a question gets posed by a younger firefighter who wants to know because of their learning style is different than our learning style. The way I learned was shut up, don't draw any attention to yourself, and you're going to pass this class, right? Mm-hmm. How did drill go 20 years for you, Todd? Now, let me ask you, and I really mean this, if you're in an environment with some heavy hitters, was it easier to be a fly on the wall, or was it easier to be the one that first put yourself out there? The person who always puts themselves out there makes the mistakes. But the mistakes for me when I was experiencing that, they weren't beneficial. Like, oh, man, that's a great mistake. That's one of my lines. Man, that's a great mistake. I love that. I've done that. Let me show you what you can do. right? On the other end, I've seen it where the senior guys that did know were afraid because they weren't willing to say something. So now we have this environment of inexperience on how to even work with each other. So I'm really trying to, you know, who I'm going to be, you know, as my career starts to, you know, eke its way out, is be who I've been and also, you know, stand to what I know I believe in. And I think that's it, you know, being a gentleman, truly being somebody who isn't in this for profit. You're there because, all right, we're there for them. I'm there for the men. I'm there because this job does mean something. It doesn't matter about a picture. It doesn't matter what I wrote. The guys that write, the guys that really write, you know, Anthony's been able to introduce me to some of them, you know, Robertson or whatever. These guys, their minds are racked with it. Dennis Laguerre, you talk to him about the things he's written. He has dreams about hoses and nozzles. He has dreams about it. You know, he's not dreaming about, you know, rolling around in dollar bills. You know, he's quantifying numbers in his head. And so there's just something there. And I hope that we as a fire service can get that connection, because that connection seems to only happen when we get a good job. All the little strife that you may have in any kind of in, you know, firehouse or even in the instruction world, when, you know, until the task gets accomplished, a class gets finished, you know, guys are man, that feels good. We did a good job, blah, blah, blah. Now let's reflect and do better. I hope that we can experience that kind of growth going forward as a fire service as a whole and not get lost in some superficial nonsense of saying, I'm aggressive for the sake of aggressive. If you're aggressive, tell me you know what it's like to tune a hose line. Even if you didn't know the language, you know, and we talked about that tonight, you understood it. You knew it. And Anthony, you know, I'm not, you know, even trying to pat my guys on the back, but I'll pat my guys on the back, but not myself. Those guys are professional, right? They can feel something and know it, and that's what you want. But they're not hyping it up. I'm hyping them up. I'm talking to them, you know, talking to you guys tonight, but that's my thought on it. You know, I'm just trying to put that together, and I hope that comes together.
No, I and everything you said is, again, just both what you and Rose shared were spot on. And I look, I mean, as an instructor, I watch other instructors. One, I want to learn what they're teaching, but then I watch, and I tell you one of the better examples, and I know not everybody, I would hope everybody listening knows when I say Captain Morris. Here's a guy who's been doing it longer than almost everybody else I know and still doing it, but the way he does it, I've seen him reach everybody from 30-year guys like myself in a technique all the way down to the 21-year-old kid, and you can tell this kid is just struggling, and he just finds a way, and it's amazing to watch. He never gets too high. He never gets too low. He never yells. He never, nothing. It just works. I loved everything you said, because I had flashbacks of my recruit training in Atlanta, and an instructor, I think that her only job in life was to yell, scream, and cuss us, and that was it. She never really taught us anything. Except that after a while, and, you know, from an instructor standpoint, I know it sounds really cool to yell and scream, and I've been on that page, and I've gotten away from that 1,000%, and I got away from it really quick. It becomes white noise after a while. Right. I don't remember 90% of what she yelled at me, because I just tuned her out, because it was always just, bullshit 90% of the time.
Right.
But the other instructor was the one actually – instructing, actually teaching, actually showing. And there was some, you know, stuff I couldn't even say on a podcast that she would call us. So lessons learned.
You know,
I think a bit. Go ahead, Sammy.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I think one of the biggest things that, you know, I was jotting down some of the things we all were talking about. As far as challenges and all those things, the contentious environment sometimes, I think, and I tell guys this all the time, don't get caught up in the, in the Twitter, Facebook, Snaptrap, all that crap wars, because some guys are just out there debating just to debate. And I'm not going to debate a computer screen because I disagree. And there's stuff on there. Sometimes I disagree with things, but I keep that to myself. Go, I wouldn't say it that way. I wouldn't do it that way. There's a thing going around on DES. I agree with some of it, and I disagree with some of it right now. But I'm not on the Book of Faces arguing with people about the way they're approaching their BES skill sets.
Yeah, when you're mentioning Captain Morris, Chief now, right? I looked at my note, right in here, and one of the notes I had with it is be like Bill Gustin, be like Captain Gustin. I took that at H-Rock because I'd never met him before, and I didn't realize he was behind me taking notes,
Mm-hmm.
And here that is. Here's this soft-spoken gentleman that's sitting there. You can be at any class and you can walk in and out of it when you're teaching and, you have kind of carte blanche. When you got a gentleman that will sit through hours of his friend's lectures and guys that he knows, lectures he's been in, but is still taking notes, I mean, it goes to show you, that his ability to share that information when I would start talking to him, it's been minimal, it's like this treat. And it's the same is, why is he that way? Why is Chief Morris that way? And I think there's something to be said about it because, all right, are they the ones out there, hooting and hollering? Are they the ones out there hooting and hollering on the internet? I mean, I think, and that's the thing. A gentleman really doesn't have anything to prove other than to themselves, and that's that part of it is, are you going to walk into a random place and just go pick a fist fight? Well, no. People are going to have opinions, and there's nothing better. I think two things: having your opinion changed on fact and being able to say I was wrong, and also engaging in somebody and teaching them that what they knew, not necessarily was wrong, but it was misunderstood. And so, I think that whole confrontational level, and I get it with the Army and some things. In the fire service, I just kind of question why we don't really treat this like we had we built a pretty neat standpipe setup for our tower, and they had year one guys and year three guys there, installing it, and at no point did the steward, the instructor there, did he ever yell at any point? He's like, you better get this done right now. No, it was this environment where they learned their trade, and here we have our trade. That you've got to do some very rapid decision making and simple skills, and it's nothing but stress. And so I hope on that end guys can see that you can reach a point not by some attitude that you say you're aggressive. You're aggressive if your ass is out there training. I mean actually training and sweating and actually doing the work. Because it comes together because you're able to say, oh, I didn't have that right. You're the first one to step up at company drill and take the hit, So.
Yeah, and I think I've kind of formed a new habit because I see this, and I talked to a couple of younger firefighters at a conference about 4 years ago, and I could see them kind of laying in the background. And it wasn't out of they didn't know or that they did not understand, but they can be easily overwhelmed if they're performing in front of 20 of their peers that are total strangers. And that's somewhat because of the crap that goes on social media and some of the things of not being a gentleman. So I kind of been starting a lot of my classes, both hands-on and lecture-based stuff with, please ask, please stay engaged. All of us are going to be better by engaging with each other. And I tell you, I literally every class I do now, I leave a notebook on the table, and it is almost guaranteed somebody's going to say something or tell me something or share a story in that class. And I tell them, hey, I'm writing this down, and I'm going to steal it, and it's going to be mine, but I'm stealing it from you. So I tell you, there's always something else to learn. Always something else to learn. But I really encourage those young guys, step on up. When you screw up, it's okay. That's why you come to training, so that you screw up here or you learn them. You learn. I love that. What you say earlier, I love this. That's a great mistake. I love. Let's make that great mistake here in front of the Hilton Hotel, forcing a door, and not at 3 a.m. when somebody's life actually depends on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I did write that.
I was trying to put this thought together because you like really sparked it for me. I think it's just to say that what guys can do is they want to go through drills really fast, or they become very emotionally attached to what they look like or what they know, and they don't want to ask what they don't know. And, mm-hmm. and what you see in more conferences, you see it, you know, the conferences that are happening is guys are willing to do that, right? Man, I'm going to go talk to Champo, and I'm going to tell him I have this issue. And I just talked to Mike Champo. Mike Champo told me how to use the ads, dot, dot, dot. But when you go to a state institution, you're kind of just in the background. You know, you don't you may be forced to be there. You may be forced for a class. You may be forced for certification or promotion. And here's that, you know, that off system that we have. In order to move up, you've got to have X, Y, and Z, but you don't have to necessarily care about the job. And so with that, you know, how do you end up breaching that with somebody? And one of the things that I end up saying, especially because in our program, we end up getting guys that have been on the job or maybe have been told, you know, this specific teaching institution, the book publisher is Doctrine. This is what got you your, you know, IPSAC accreditation. Is I say, please do me a favor. If you feel emotionally attached to the information that we're sharing and it offends you, it makes you think that we're full of crap, I want you to write that down. And we want to talk about it. I want you to tell me why. Because when you become emotionally attached to it to that degree, you're taking the information and saying that it's basically just this is it. This is the holy Bible of what should be. And the only thing I want to make sure is that if you can prove it to me, if you can prove what your opinion is, I'm going to write what you have to tell me down. I love that you know. It has to be this give take, but it cannot be this, I am it, or this is it. You know, if you work with, you know, if you take classes with some of those great guys, they're not speaking down from the pulpit. They're bringing the information directly hands-on. One of the things that we changed directly, you know, we and I think everyone can agree, you know, being introduced to anything by PowerPoint that immediately may turn you off. And that's just a common, you know, method that we use in a fire service. And it's sometimes very necessary. I'm not just saying no. But one of the things that we changed is that we took the PowerPoint out of our program and it became purely working lecture. We call it a working lecture. And so we have, you know, our 3 objectives to 10 objectives that we're going to nail that are the same between 8 instructors working that day. But this isn't the Calumet City way to the Gary way to the Chicago way to the Mobile way. You know, this is the information. This is a foundational piece, and that's that. Apply it, understand it. You know, and so I think that's a huge part of it. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I did some experimenting recently with some classes where. It's nothing but either video picture or one line, and that's it. And then it's nothing but full-on discussion points from students. And, you know, obviously you're directing that, but it's amazing how much more engagement you can get. I know me and Roetz had this conversation. He knows I probably could scale back some of my engagement, to be honest. I tend to over-engage it. Because I warn classes, you know, be prepared. I'm asking a lot of questions, not to put you on the spot, but I want us engaged. I want us talking. I want us communicating. And it seems to work. I get a lot of feedback on that. But with and Roetta kind of some of the stuff we've been kind of going back and forth on. I love everything Sammy's been saying. Your feelings, and I love the one you put a little highlight next to it about that contention and that contentious environment. It's almost like if I ask Rowett a question during training, am I challenging him or am I asking the question because I'm trying to gain more understanding? And sometimes I feel like students are asking these contentious questions, almost like, you know, when you weren't looking, they Googled the shit out of you or something.
Yeah, I can see both sides of it. I do think most of the time they're actually asking a question to try to learn. I think there's few people that do have that. They're being contentious, but I think most questions, even if they come across a certain way, they're usually coming from a good place where someone doesn't understand and they are trying to gain a better understanding and to learn. But a couple things Sammy said that, and you said, like the white noise, I agree with that 100%. Like you brought up what Sammy said. I thought that was awesome. Because I think I've heard him say it before when we were together in Virginia, and it just, like, it was a flashback when he said it of a good mistake. Like, I'd rather make it here, but it's a good one. I learned from it. If I learn from it, it's worth making the mistake, but let's make it in training. Let's not make it on the fire ground. Let's do the training. Let's put the work in the forefront and make that mistake now so that I can correct it and learn how to be better when I need to. But yeah, those were a couple things you guys said from the good mistake. I really like that. The white noise was like, I've just lived through it. Like, you just tone it out. And it's like, okay, yep, another ass chewing. Here we go. Yep, okay. And but you miss a teaching point in that moment. They weren't just yelling at you for no reason. There was a teaching point, but you get right. Used to the point where it's just background noise and you miss that teaching point. You got to have somebody, if you're going to be teaching, you got to care. You've got to care what the outcome is. You can't just be there to get the information across. You have to care that they receive the information and that they get better. If you don't, you're wasting everybody's time because they're not getting what they deserve. You're not doing your part by giving them what they deserve. So you do have to care. So just forcing the information and not making sure that they get an understanding and that they improve, everybody's getting wasted time there. Their time's being wasted. Your time's being wasted. No one might as well should have done it. So you've got to put the time in and care to do it right. So I really felt that. And then what Sammy was talking about with he didn't want to brag on it or brag on himself, but he was going to brag on his guys. And I think that goes to not just his personality, but also he was right in the middle of it. So it goes on Sammy too. But just going back to that, just little things, when you put the time in training to have little things like tuning a line and the professionalism it shows, because that's not just one person. That's not just one person. It impacts everybody. If everybody's doing things to that level, that's why you have good outcomes on the fire ground, because it's not just one guy was professional. He started listing off names, and I'm sure he's only listing off a couple of names. There's a lot more that could have went with it. So those are the real big things I've taken out of the last little while we've been talking, was the good mistakes, the professionalism. That was really stood out to me when he was talking about that, like you said, with the tune of the line, even if it's different terminology for different regions of the country, but just the professionalism it showed and caring for the job and doing it right and mastering a craft, and then, you know, things like that.
Yeah, no, I thought it was – I thought everything was spot on. So I got one more – I got another thing. I want to throw this topic out there, and I was having this conversation with him before you got online, Anthony, but – I'm going to start with you on this one, Anthony. What is the future of training? And again, we're kind of staying that ground. What do we need to do more of, or what do we need to improve on? I know you said some of those things, but where do you see the future of our job going as far as keeping up? And you guys made some unbelievable points already. I mean, God, the information. I love when I hear guys say this. I hear several instructors saying this now. If you're ignorant nowadays, ignorance is no longer an excuse in the fire service. It truly is not. There's too many resources to be stupid about our job.
There's going to be, and I think it's already starting, but I think there's going to be a push now and into the next few years in the future to become even more computer-based, and I think that's a mistake. I think we need to be doing what we do. We're blue-collar employees. It is what it is. We wear blue shirts for a reason. We're blue-collar, hands-on employees, and that's the way our training needs to be. We can talk all we want, and tabletops are great. I'm not against it. We do them all the time. We talk things over, or we're introducing information. But we're blue-collar employees. We have to be able to do it physically. We have to be able to do it with our hands to be effective. The bulk of our training, the bulk of what we do, needs to be improving skill sets. It needs to be out actually physically performing a skill, because even if it's something you and your crew do all the time, just the more you do it is the more efficient you become. Maybe for the newer guy, it's the less he has to think about it. The more he's thinking and racing through his mind of just how to perform the skill, the more likely a mistake is to occur. So the more they can think about the scene and the skill set is handled because they've done it so many times, that actually stretching the line or actually forcing the door, actually throwing the ladder, they're not having to think about how to perform the skill. They can process the scene. That's going to result in a lot better scene, a lot less mistakes, less injuries and things like that. So I think at the end of the day, it all just comes back to the job hasn't really changed. We may have tried to change it. People have tried to change it. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. The fire department's a fire department. We're responding to fires, put fires out in buildings. It's a physical job. It's not going to stop being a physical job. And our training needs to mimic that. It doesn't need to become this very computer-based, watch something on a video or some virtual reality or anything like that. It needs to actually be a physical, hands-on skill set training and live fire training. We can't get away from actually putting people in environments that they're going to have to operate in.
So you're not a fan of electronic nozzles and glow-in-the-dark fires? is that what you're telling me?
I think you probably already know the answer knowing me, but no, I like actual hands-on training and live fire training, because I think the more you put somebody in an environment that you expect them to operate in, the better they're ever going to be and the less mistakes they're going to make, which is the better service we're going to provide.
Okay. All right. Sammy.
Yeah. Anthony, I love you. I miss you a lot too, man. So I just wanted to put that out there. I love hearing you, man. So the one thought I had, and this makes me think of Anthony and just the program again, going back to that, is I think we need to have like a Congress of Learning in the fire service. Aaron talked quite a bit about how we learn in language, and other guys have broken down, the science behind it. Like, when you go into the specifics of it, but I really do think the fire service should take a stand as a whole and look at what we get delivered as information. Because if you have, again, I'm not promoting some communism or something like that, but if you have companies that are just solely based for, economic profit, in the information, what do they have invested in the information that they share? Their slides can be completely off. And this matters. This matters with the information they share to the guy in rural, in any part of the state. That is the only information they're going to get, and they get the slides with it, and they do an in-house, firefighter academy. And so I would really hope that there could be something, just an established, defined resource. One of the things we're going to try, and Austin recently did what we wanted to do much better than I think I could do it. So I really want to – if anybody from Austin in their training department is listening, please, I want to talk to you. But is to compile and cite and reference the information that is there and keep it current and keep it foundational. A foundational skill can be applied to any local tactic, a foundational, understanding. And like you mentioned about the learning management systems, I won't mention any specific names. I took over training here and have been immersed. And not like I know anybody who was on NFPA 14 or anything like that, but, the standards are so sterile. JPRs are so sterile. And that's what training officers will get to direct their training. And either they're trying to find some sort of resource and say, all right, we're going to throw ladders today. Oh, crap, I had this really great PDF from the city of New York from 1978, or they got this. And it's the right information. It's the forcible entry Bible, but it completely contradicts what may be provided from the state. And so, after the last couple of years of just having – and the state of Illinois is getting much more dialed in with it. But there has to be this ability to connect technology and mindset. And so this is the goal here for our training program, is that our company officers, hopefully after my – I'm training up the next guy to take over for me. I don't want to do this forever. But my hope is that the vision would be that the company officer can get their learning management system. It logs in the JPRs that they need to keep, ISO, IFSET, you know, ISO, OSHA, all the compliance stuff. That has to be done. That's the business of any kind of, you know, organization. And that it doesn't take away the soul of what training should be. And Anthony nailed it. It shouldn't be a video or just some, you know, sterile little PowerPoint that you do on your phone. But if your company officer hasn't done a firefighter bailout in 2 years, and it just kind of hits that cycle where firefighter survival, that's the skill that comes up. If they have the reference and they have a good drill sheet, and that drill sheet is cited reference material by, you know, Gary Coney from the Chicago Fire Department explaining, you know, firefighter survival or RID operations, you have this direct material that is proven, that is there, and it's not just, you know, the I think, the, you know, not just, you know, to blow up the fire engineering book that came out, but the NFPA Firefighter 1 is very, very much quality. And it's quality not because of the publisher, it's quality because of the people who put the information in there. And I hope that in general that we can connect the technology and just get away from sterile training. Guys will go out of their way to go to, you know, I went to Minnesota for my first nozzle pour class at an Army base, you know, and not near any city, not near any bars or good food. It was barracks food. And it was one of the best classes I ever took, right? And I would do that for every class I would ever have again, because it wasn't sterile. It has to be objective-based. It has to be well-formed and foundationally driven. I mean, everything that's been introduced can be given to other training officers. But I just really, if I can relate that, I hope the fire service itself can relate that we all want to do our job the best as possible. If you're a pencil pusher truly at heart or whatever, maybe they wouldn't understand it. But we do run this fire service. We do run the tempo of this thing. You know, Chief Alton isn't out there at FDIC, you know, like the last one he had where he was kind of hooting and hollering and he was fired up, you know. We do have it, you know, and I hope that organizations can form that backbone and say, well, we don't have to train sterile, or we can do the extra work to make the drill better, or reach out to organizations. And again, you know, a plug for FSI is that they give away, like, their model for doing training like that to the state. You know, they give away free training. They take government funds to do free training. You can request any kind of class that's in their catalog. And I think the one thing that they're going to continue to do, which is what we all have to do, is set up the next generation who's taking from us, you know, what they're learning from us, to make them way better than us, you know, detaching what you've done for it and making sure that, you know, ensuring that they're going to be better at it, you know. And so I really hope that happens with us. I think it'd be a critical part of us, you know, maintaining our ethics, I guess.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with both of what you both said. But I think I think one thing you said early on there, Sammy, about having this kind of this council on training, and not the pencil pusher training, not the 300-pound guy that hasn't been on a rig and, you know, God knows how long, or couldn't put on his turnout gear if he had to, but he writes a really mean article. That sterile environment, and I've talked to guys where their officers or their chief officers won't let them go out and throw ground ladders because they're worried about somebody getting hurt throwing ground ladders. My thought was, well, if you're not throwing them, aren't the odds of getting hurt even more? Well, that's what we said. But, you know, I know a department where they're allowed to throw straight side only, and their chief feels that if you can throw the straight, then you can throw an extension ladder. I guess he doesn't understand that those are different sizes, different weights, different mechanisms. I don't know what is. I think of the future, and I know we're ways away from this, but this is one of the things I thought was really cool, and I hope every department will take kind of a step back and look. FDNY, when they built the new rescue house, made it where it's almost like a training inside their bay where they can do pickoff and a lot of this skill set. I think bigger jobs and even smaller jobs, man, how much easier it is for a job the size of Chicago, Boston, FDNY, obviously Atlanta, if a firehouse training tower and we have a forceful entry prop and we have, you know, it's not 100%, you know, like a live fire, but man, you could really do some really cool things with your station design. Get away from all your separate bedroom shit. Get away with worrying about how many ADA compliant bathrooms you have. And let's build a station around training that we're going to have, you know, fire trucks inside of. And, you know, you have, you know, still need a kitchen, still need recliners. I get all that. But I love that design and that concept that you have no excuses now. You have a drill tower inside your firehouse. I mean, how cool would that be? That you're coming to a training ground to work out of every single day while you're running calls. In the middle of the drill, no problem. You know, we're coming right back to our drill tower. Got the facilities right here.
Let me put this one out to you. Did you ever get to see Rusty 2?
Yep. Oop, I lost you there. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Were you ever able to visit Rusty 2's old house before they got the new one?
No.
Yeah, I was.
So their original one, you know, beautiful, well-storied, you know, classic New York firehouse, they built all their own props into it, you know. And what I think, and I can't say this for sure, I feel like they forced the hand of administration to say, these guys are ate up. They're into it. They're going to train. You know, going to the Rock isn't just enough. And they had, you know, cans, and they had all kinds of stuff set up. And I'm pretty sure a lot of it was stuff that they, you know, made homemade. And so I love that. You know, I was thinking about this now. Like, if you don't have the ability to have a training tower and all you have is your firehouse, you've got to have an area that you can bang out some ladders. You have to. You know, you can't expect to function as even a volunteer firehouse. You know, or we're going over ladders and we're going over a video on how to throw it because it's, 1002 objective training. No, come on, man. You get a pad, go throw it. Throw it against a tree. I don't know, you know, but go put them up. And so, yeah, I love that. I hope, man, that'd be rad if every firehouse could be built around that, you know?
Even if you had to do it like on bigger jobs, you know, doing it. One training house in every battalion. So, and you know, especially
right.
You look at, you know, obviously New York, you know, ridiculous, large. Me and Bro got to go tour the Rock this past year, and I could have just moved in. I mean, it was just, you know, it was like, you know, or if you have a FDTN in every, you know, state that you can go to, or, you know, that's just not, you know, how this works, but... a little less budget on brand new Chiefs cars and a little more budget and forethought on our station designs and not on comfort, but on functionality, I think is a huge thing for the future of training, future of organizations to promote hands-on training. You know, yes, do your GPA, all your job performance requirement stuff and all that. I get that. I fully understand that. But after that, we've got to be able to throw ladders. I mean, you've already spent, you know, $1.2, $3.4, $4 million on a firehouse. Well, go ahead and add in the next few bucks and have concrete window ledges on the outside so I can throw ground ladders to it.
Right.
You know, something like so I don't have to worry about, you know, all that kind of crap. Or just give me a parapet wall with a window in it that I can throw ladders to, do bailouts from. You know, anything like that that's going to enhance, promote training within my organization.
And then also, I'll just say cheers to those company officers that I had before we had a training tower that would just say, you know, screw it. We're going to go out there and throw ladders on a vacant. You know, we're going to throw ladders over here. Be respectful to what you're doing. Don't tear up anything unnecessarily. We're going to throw lines over here. We're going to do it in the parking lot. You know,
oh yeah.
You can't get it. You better go make do, you know, because it's not going to get better until that becomes a standard that houses can be developed like that, which it should.
Yeah,
that's
we did
part of that comment. I think we figured that out. Todd, I think we figured it out. That's agenda one. Firehouses need to be built on training, too.
I agree. 100%. Boom.
Yeah.
We just fixed it all.
That's agenda one of the Congress. Boom. That one's done. All right.
And if I'm going to build it just within a battalion, if I'm only building one station like that per battalion or per district, I'm also going to have my best people at that house that are instructors. So when I rotate engine 7 over to the training house, I've already got instructors in place, so we eliminate that excuse. So, yeah, I think we're not even talking about rocket science here. That's the cool thing about this conversation. These are easy. Now, I know they're not easy. I get that. But somewhere right now, a firehouse is being designed. Money's approved. Think about your design before, you know, and I haven't gone into the design classes or – I know there's design conferences even, but I got a feeling a lot of those conferences are based on comfort, water retention ponds, energy efficiency, you know, you have the Viking stovetop and all that shit. Give me the tower and just give me a regular old gas stove. I'll figure out the rest from cooking and cleaning crap.
So there ain't nothing better than going into a firehouse and seeing that, right? When you visit a firehouse. When you visit a firehouse, isn't there nothing better that you see when you walk in and you see, you know, the way the rig looks, but you see a tool bench that's being used. You see, you know, guys that sit around the table actually talking, caring, having coffee. And, like, I'm just going to just hit that real quick. But just that whole sterile part of the fire service, sterile JPRs, sterile objectives, sterile firehouses with vaulted ceilings. You said it. I'd rather have an oven. A round table that we can play cards with, or, you know, eat meals and actually look at each other in the eyes, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah, and every station should have a kitchen table in the bay. You can have a nice, clean kitchen, but you got to have a table in the apparatus floor.
That's right, absolutely.
That should be a must. That should be part of building your next firehouse. We're going to have a 20 by 80 area in the rear. That's where the table's going.
Yep.
So, Sam, I know this year, I don't know how many times you've listened or had the opportunity to hear any of these podcasts that me and Ro have been doing now for a while, but we always end like this. We kind of do a final thought thing. If you're going to be teaching anywhere, if you're attending anywhere where somebody may have an opportunity to come up and shake your hand, whether you're just going as a conference attendee or if you're teaching somewhere, I always like our guests to promote that out. So we know where to look for you at. And I will start with Roette on, let me say this, and not everybody knows this either. This has been a big couple months around the fire service and for some people personally. Anthony has a brand new anymore, but has a new son. How's he doing, Anthony?
Yep. He's doing good. He's still got his days and nights mixed up, so. But he's not understanding when the lights turn off. It's time to go to sleep. He's sleeping when the lights are on. But other than that, he's doing real good.
Good, good, good. I'm glad to hear that. Anthony, if you can give me your closing thoughts, and I'll switch it over to Sammy next. Go ahead.
Well, first off, Sammy, thanks for taking your time out of your day to come on and talk with us tonight. I've really enjoyed the things you had to say, and my final thought's going to be something Sammy said, and it's just bringing in the basics. That's what's going to make the difference every time, is the guys that they've got their skill sets down and they're able to just go ahead and do what they got to do. So just focus on the basics and be able to do those things. If you ever want to contact me, Facebook, Instagram, Port City Fire Training, that's why I answer all those. And I'm not traveling a lot here with the new baby, so I'll be in the Birmingham area with Todd. I guess that's this month now because we had to change a month. And then not really travel until after the first of the year. Come February, I'll be out in Oregon doing stuff with Todd in Alabama in March, and then out to FDIC in April.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, and I will see you in just a few weeks in Batavia Hills.
Of course, I was going to miss this. I'll be at my favorite conference, the last HROC, of course. Let me make that tribute. It's not very far. It's only an hour away, so she was good with me going out of town to go to the last HROC.
I have you scheduled this stuff. I'm there and in Vestavia, definitely, bro.
I will be at both of them. Don't worry.
All right. Thank you. Sammy, final thoughts, my brother.
Sure. I just want to say congratulations, Anthony. Man, children,
thanks, buddy.
We've talked a little bit about this at when we've got to work together. They're the light, you know. As much as we love our jobs, you know, I think the amount that you give and how you love your children, man, speaks volumes of who you are. So I'm very, very happy for you guys. Just a closing thought was I hope that you care. I hope that anybody with this, and you know, if you spend the time listening to this, I appreciate you guys having me on the show. You can take that time and maybe put that back and reflect. If you made mistakes, if you were a shouter in the past, or you made mistakes with the guys around the crew, the only way to make up for it is to do the work and make the apologies, to say you're wrong, to learn the information, to prove that you're right. To actually believe in it. Well, you know, one of my pals, Mike Alt, he reached out and he was happy I was doing the show. So I think I'd be doing him a disservice if I didn't talk about this shortly. Was one of the things I learned from the Army over in Georgia is the infantry museum, and they have the last 10 yards, and they basically say, the infantryman wins the last 10 yards, no matter what happens on the battlefield. You have a tank, a drone, whatever. The last 10 yards is always taken by the infantry. And on the field there, they have, soil from across the world of places where the infantry, LZ X-ray or Lexington and stuff. But anyway, one of the things that got me connected with Mike, and I express it to guys, is that we come from something very special, from the dawn of time, where since people could sit around in circles around a fire and protect each other, that's what our group has been doing. And when you show up on a fire engine, there's no, and it's a quote by the author Vonnegut, but there's no greater inspiration than that fire engine showing up at somebody's house. And once you step off that rig, you take back a lawn and you give it back to that family. You cross the threshold of that door, you're giving that back to the family. You know, you take every room back. You make every space habitable, while you're flowing water, while you're doing the work that we do and you're making a search. You're taking all of that back. And in the end, that is what you do. It's not about, and I believe that social media can be very good for this, contacting each other and reaching out and learning. But what it's not going to, fill in the gap for is that work and the actual belief in it. So I just hope that we continue as a group to remember what we come from and continue being what we're going to be. And I think, for me, where I'm going to be in the state and everything, I do a lot of work with FSI. So I've got classes around the state of Illinois doing Winter Fire College. Our program happens. We're going to be doing more of our program in the state, hoping that we can end up taking a part of that to FDIC with some of the other classes that we're designing. I don't have any real big plans to be teaching anywhere outside in the next year, trying to focus on my family. And I'm always willing for a phone call or a chat. If I'm in the area, I'll stop by for a cup of coffee and answer any questions. I just wanted to say what a pleasure it is to get to know you, Todd, and catch up with Anthony, and it's really cool. So thank you very much.
No, and I'll echo Anthony on thanking you for taking time out. Thank your brother there that came in to kind of cover you while you spent a couple hours with us and sharing everything you shared and your experiences, your fire. Just everything that you were able to get out tonight, which was just phenomenal stuff. And I hope we'll plug this back out and really encourage people to download and take some time to listen to it. I think
Todd, real quick.
Yes, sir.
Can I ask you something? just real quick.
Yeah.
I got a buddy in the area. He's a fireman in a city close to me. He runs a training call or a charity called the Yard Foundation. I just want to plug that real quick. This guy has raised close to $500,000. It's completely on the level charity. They do really good work. They're on social media if you ever find them. Feels good to do good. They recently just gave raised enough money to give 31 free mammograms. When somebody dies in a fire service, they're one of the first ones to immediately respond and hand a check over. And so I just wanted to plug my friend Tony and Clem and the crew with the Yard Foundation. If anybody is listening, please check them out, because we spend more money, you know, buying energy drinks or coffee than we actually do helping out other firefighters on the job. And they can show you what they do on a regular basis, and their memberships are pretty, they're not funny, but it's honorary. You can do a donation at $3.43 a month or $9.11 a month. And it actually means something. So, I just wanted to plug that. Sorry. Apologize.
No, I love it. No, I actually wrote that down. I will be looking them up. I'm a huge believer in that. I think that as a whole in the fire service, we need to do more support for those type of organizations. And like you said, what we spend on some of the stuff we spend money on is sometimes insanity. I agree. But I think kind of going back, I think our job is just an amazing history lesson, and I try to share that, especially when I'm with younger members, kind of going back and, you know, never forget where you came from rookie to, you know, lieutenant, captain, the fire chief, wherever you're at, don't ever forget where you came from, and share those history lessons both on your job and from other jobs. You know, you can look up unbelievable amounts of information about our job from, you know, and I'm a little bit probably over the top when I talk about fire marks and, you know, where the fire marks come from and, you know, understanding where the Halligan, I'm always amazed when guys don't know where the damn Halligan bar came from, you know, the little things like that, sometimes that piques people's interest that, you know, the job wasn't always $800,000 fire trucks and low pressure hose and we weren't always flowing 160 GPMs a minute and had this invincible turnout gear and breathing apparatus. And I think that feeds into our training mindset too, just seeing where we were, what we've come from and where we're going. And that's why I had that as part of our topic tonight about where we see the future of the fire service or as far as training goes. I'm going to be out and about quite a bit over the next couple months. Obviously our incredible training opportunity coming up in a few weeks in Vestavia Hills, Alabama, where we have a 6-story, 2-tower vacant hotel. The class sold out. And that, when you were talking about that sterile environment earlier, Sam, that's the first thing I thought of. That class sold out in literally 23 hours because guys aren't looking for – and there's no lecture. It is literally just 2 days of hands-on, of humping hose, hitting standpipes, throwing ladders, doing drags, carrying victims, doing survival skills, all over the course of basically just, you know, 2 solid days of getting nasty, dirty, hard grunt work is what this program is. It is not, there is nothing sterile about this hotel. I've been in it multiple times. So make sure you guys bring plenty of hand sanitizer with you. But yeah, I'll be there. Part of the V-Last HROC. I'm super excited about it. It's going to be spectacular. And I'll be definitely down there. And then we have the fire conference after that down there. So there's just a lot of really cool things. Obviously, social media is one way. I'm really anal about my email, so you can hit me up at toddedwards6@yahoo.com. I'm constantly checking that. And then my webpage is firelifetrainingassociates.com. All the upcoming classes, I try to plug out everybody's events because there's just so many great opportunities for guys out there. And I hope everybody takes advantage of that. Sammy, again, thank you so much. Thank you to your brother for sitting in for you this evening and kind of watching over you while you were on this. And everybody who's listening, we thank you for your time, and we will see you next month. Is that right, Anthony? I think I won't.
Hold on, let me try. No, I'm here. Hold on. Hey. I'm trying to look at the calendar real quick and see.
I know. I think it's next
yeah,
month. It's in
December 13th. December 13th.
Yeah, we'll be
I
back.
Just found it. December 13th.
Yeah, and so we'll be back for that, and we're excited for that next show. So everybody be safe out there, and we will talk to everybody next month. Thanks again, Sammy.
Thank you. Guys, take care.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Sam.
All right, brother. Be good, man.